This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is Clark Cadzo. He is the proprietor of Highland Coffees, has been for 25 years. Come November, Highland Coffees will celebrate its anniversary of 25 years on Chime Street. There's been one move during that period, but Clark, over the last quarter century, has become the resident authority of the neighborhood that is closest to Louisiana State University, the North Gate. Good morning to you, Clark Cadzo.
Good morning. Great to be here.
You started your endeavor at Highland Coffees when you were 25?
25, 26, something like that.
So you're 50 now, so that's half a lifetime ago.
Thanks for reminding me, yes.
And you did so after collecting degrees from LSU and the University of Texas, and you have a master's degree in social work, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, that's quite often important for a coffee shop owner.
I think so. I think it's half business, half social work.
You think so?
That's my experience.
You have to tend to your client's needs in any number of ways, right?
That's right. That's right. I thought I was sort of putting it on the back burner. I didn't know how much I'd be using it.
Well, the coffee that is served at Highland is brewed right there
roasted
in the shop, right?
Right, roasted in the shop. We bring in the green beans from around the world and roast it in the shop, and that gives us control over our main product and keeps it very fresh.
Okay, and as a result of that, despite all these coffee shops sprouting up nearby and elsewhere, including on campus, Highland has stood tall and proud in a neighborhood that's undergone a lot of transition over the last 25 years. You've seen mm-hmm. Chime Street change a great deal.
I have. I think the spirit of the neighborhood really is still the same as it's always been, because it's at the gates of the university. But it has undergone some changes. I would say certainly mostly for the better over the last 15 or 20 years. I think the neighborhood looks really good right now.
What's been the biggest change?
I would say just new businesses coming in, certain businesses leaving, that has helped, you know, bring in a different clientele and keep the neighborhood looking its best.
Well, you have new neighbors. You used to have the Bayou next door.
Right, we did. The Bayou was there for a long time, famous for the pool hall and sex, lies, and videotape being filmed there and other things.
And a fire that shut you down for about 6 months.
Fire that shut us down for 6 months, but we came back, and Reginelli's came in after a few years and has done well there, and we're really happy to have them in the neighborhood.
Now, when we talk about the Northgate neighborhood, we're talking about where? Chime Street to...
Well,
what?
Depends on how you define it, but it's mostly Chimes and State and Highland. And you can go all the way down to, say, Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what we think of.
So would Der Wiener Schnitzel be in the Northgate neighborhood?
I think we have to include Der Wiener Schnitzel. It's been around, I think, since the mid-60s.
Well, yeah, it's been there at the same location. Mm-hmm. No move for the Der Wiener Schnitzel. There have been moves for Highland, moves for Louis. Der Wiener Schnitzel stays where it is and must be doing enough business stay open.
I guess so. I haven't been there in a long time, but somebody's going there.
Okay, well, let's start. Serrano's. Mm-hmm. It closed down a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. I didn't read anything about it, but it was there for, 14, 15 years,
and one of the owners are kind of changing their concept. They're going to bring in a place called Barcadia, which is, I think, a small chain out of Dallas, or out of Texas, rather, and they have a location in the Warehouse District in New Orleans. It's a combination of restaurant and bar and arcade. So that should do well right there at the North Gates.
Right there. And, of course, on the other side of the street, you had vacant buildings for many years. And now the building that's adjacent to you has clients and substantial ones mm-hmm. that are doing thriving business.
Mm-hmm. You talk about like Five Guys and Chipotle.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They're doing really well. Those are big name restaurants, and they're attracting a lot of people.
297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And you may reach us by email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Chris in Baton Rouge. Chris, good morning. Where are you calling from, Baton Rouge?
Good morning. I'm calling from the Southern University Law Center.
Okay, Chris. How are you? Well, go for it. You're on the air with Clark.
Clark Cadzow, I'm a huge fan of Highland Coffees, as you know, and I wanted to ask you to maybe share with the listeners. There's so many competing centers kind of around town, the Perkins Road overpass, Government Street is kind of developing its own vibe. What do you think is needed in the Northgate area to really help that part of town compete and grow and be kind of the same kind of center that those other areas are becoming? And I'll take my answer offline.
That's Chris Oden, a professor at Southern Law School and a great customer of Highland Coffees. I think that what we need is—that's a very good question. It's kind of involve a long answer, but you're right. The Perkins Road overpass, downtown, mid-city, these are historic, unique shopping districts for Baton Rouge, and they're very, very important because they are historic and they don't look like the same busy shopping streets in other cities. And so we have to pay a lot of attention and support these neighborhoods. And the North Gates is one of them. The North Gates is the second oldest shopping district in Baton Rouge, going back to the mid-1920s, second only behind downtown. And what we need to do is just work on our infrastructure and promote the neighborhood as the historic college town shopping district that it is. It is a little bit off the beaten path, but it is also worth maybe going out of your way to support a neighborhood like the North Gates because of its value to the city.
297-5633 for Clark Cadzow, owner of Highland Coffees, which has survived and thrived for 25 years at the North Gate, right at the corner, first at Highland and Chimes, and now one door down from the corner on Chimes Street. And his coffee shop is there among many other businesses that have been there for a long time and others that are just sprouting up. And one of those that's been there for a long time is Louie's, which began in 1941 on Chime Street, moved to State Street in 1986, and now will move to Lake Street in 2014. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's a great move. I know that, first of all, he's in Louie's and Jimmy Weatherford, the owner, are going to get a lot more parking, which they really have wanted for a long time. They're also going to get approximately a third more seating, so it won't be too much bigger, but it'll help. And also importantly, sort of behind the scenes, they're going to get a lot more kitchen space, as I understand it, which will make things a lot more comfortable in the back of the restaurant. So I think it's a great move for Louie's.
Maybe there'll be a Louie's 1 and Louie's 2. We'll have Louie.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to lease that out. I think 1's enough.
We'll have Fred at one location,
right,
and Frenchie at the other.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be.
It may be hard to duplicate the atmosphere there, but people
That's
said
the
same thing when you moved.
They did. That's the challenge. And so I think they're aware of that challenge, and they're going to make it look as much like the old Louie's as possible.
Well, it may be difficult to do that, but Jimmy Weatherford is the man to make it happen, so we shall see.
Right.
We're going to go back to the phone lines in just a moment, but inevitably we get a call, and this time an inquiry online from Gene about towing issues. Riverside. Riverside Towing. They've towed me. They probably towed you, Clark.
They haven't gotten me yet. But
they're out there in vigor and towing people who are oblivious to the risks if you park your car in a spot that says we tow. So how do you deal with that as a business person? It must be an aggravation.
Huge aggravation. Very, very frustrating. I think towing ought to be an absolute last resort. The towing has actually decreased quite a bit over the last several months. But I think that should be an absolute last measure before you tow somebody. You should try to talk with them, leave a note, do whatever you can, but towing, there's just not very much parking, and it's difficult because the neighborhood is so congested, but towing should almost never happen.
297-5633 for Clark Cadzow, owner of Highland Coffees. Ruth in Mid-City. Ruth, good morning.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Clark. I wanted you to ask Clark if he could talk a little bit about his research into the neighborhood, his collection of photographs and stories, and how that's progressing.
All right. I recognize that voice as Ruth
Me
Laney,
too.
An accomplished journalist. And Clark, by the way, this is kind of a prelude to a larger presentation next Tuesday at the Old Governor's Mansion. The Foundation for Historical Louisiana has invited Mr. Clark Cadzo to make a presentation, and it will happen next Tuesday at noon. But you have become the keeper of the flame of the North Gate, and you have photographs from then and now, and it's a substantial collection, isn't it?
I've acquired maybe a couple of hundred really good old photographs from the neighborhood, and I realized when I first opened all those years ago that there was a great love for the neighborhood by people who had had connections with Tigertown and the North Gates. When we first opened on the corner, everybody would come in and say, did you know this used to be the goalpost when I was in school? And that went back to the 1950s, Jack Saban's goalpost. And so it was very early on I realized there was a love of this neighborhood from people throughout Baton Rouge and Louisiana. And so I felt like that history was going to disappear because there was no gathered history of the neighborhood. So I started gathering it up and finding old photos so that this history would not disappear. And that's what I'll be talking about on next Tuesday at the Historical Society.
All right. 297-5633. Elizabeth wants to know about Round the Corner.
Round the Corner, a lot of people bring that restaurant up. Of course, that was where Serrano's was recently, where Barcadia is going in, right next to the Varsity. Round the Corner was very popular in the 1970s and 1980s. They had the phones that you would call in your order.
Yeah.
You sit at the booth and call in your order on a telephone. And they had, I remember the Hickory Burger there when I was in school. I used to love that. Before Round the Corner, for about 30 years, was a very well-known restaurant called Baker's. So anyone from the 40s, 50s, and 60s will remember Baker's.
And the Chimes used to be a drugstore.
Chimes was three drugstores over a period of decades. Started with Sitman's Drugs, then it became Maxwell's Drugs, and then it became Tigertown Pharmacy, and finally the legendary Chimes.
And the original floor is still in it, isn't it?
Original floor is still there. I admire it every time I go in.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
It is beautiful. And, of course, there was the Varsity Theater, which has become the Varsity Music Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Leon Russell was there last week.
That's right.
Oh, I'm sure you were there, too.
I missed that one, unfortunately, but I have been to some great concerts there. I love the Varsity.
The Varsity, which I remember fondly as a theater, mm-hmm. two-screener,
mm-hmm.
and some great films were shown there, and it shut down in the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
right about the time you were opening.
That's right. I think they shut down in 1987, maybe a year or two before I opened.
Mm-hmm. And when Clark was putting the pieces together to open his coffee shop, as I recall, you had WRKF wafting in the breeze. You could hear it.
I remember it well.
It's Shirley Sands.
It seems like it was yesterday. And I remember painting the walls late at night and listening to Shirley.
297-5633 for Clark Cadzo. Another question from a listener. John wants to know about what was at the location where the Circle K is now?
That was many different things. Originally, back in the 1950s, I believe the first business there was called the Dairy Bar. It was a little ice cream shop. It's probably most well known for Hoppers. Hoppers Drive-In Restaurant was there in the 50s and early 60s. And some people remember the Spaghetti Store was there in the 70s.
I do.
And then later, Bono's Pizza.
Yeah, you got everyone I remembered. Yeah. And Crow Peel's gas station was right there where the Smoothie
right across the street, Crow Peel.
Crow Peel, and the Smoothie King's been there for quite a while.
Seems like he's been there for maybe 12 years,
That. 297-5633, your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org, and we'll take a short break and return in 90 seconds with Clark Cadzo of Highland Coffees. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, 877-217-5757. If you're calling outside the Baton Rouge area, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org. In just a bit, we will hear from the renowned political consultant, Raymond Strother, but we have some more time with Clark Cadzo, who will be at the Old Governor's Mansion as a production of the Foundation for Historical Louisiana next Tuesday, the 8th, at high noon. So we look forward to hearing more from Clark at that time, but we have him for a few more minutes now. Donnie in Mid-City. Donnie, good morning. You're on with Clark.
Hello, Clark. How are you doing? Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, Clark, my question is, over near BRCC, in that corridor between Florida and Government Street, There are any number of businesses, and I noticed there was once a coffee shop there, but it closed down. And I'm just wondering, isn't it a viable area with that number of students to have a coffee shop nearby?
Well, that's a very good question. The thing about universities, it's true at LSU and every university, is they have seasons where the students are there and the students are gone. And that makes it difficult for a business that's so close to the university, because you have to be able to pull in a lot of other people from outside the campus to support the business all year long. So that's the biggest difficulty with having a coffee shop right next to a university.
297-5633 for Clark Cadzo in our remaining time with him. And another listener notes the default of the old university shopping center. I guess all the tenants in that shopping center have gone, except for Inga, who used to be at Blimpie's and had her own place, and now is down the street from you.
We're thankful Inga found a place in the neighborhood. Unfortunately, in that process, we lost some iconic tenants, including the Co-op bookstore, which had been in the neighborhood for about 7 years, and also Chelsea's. Luckily, Inga found a place on Chime Street, and Inga's been a beloved sandwich shop in the neighborhood for about 30 years.
Do you miss Murphy's?
I do. I have good memories of Murphy's. When I was there, it was a very popular hangout.
Yeah. And you remember what it was before Murphy's?
Ooh, I have to check my chart. I know it was, you talk about the Long Branch?
Yeah, I think you're good. Mm-hmm. The Long Branch Saloon. That's what it was when I was a freshman in 1977. Miriam, where are you calling from, Miriam? Don?
Miriam. Hey, Clark?
Yes, hi.
This is Miriam Maxwell.
Yes.
Deadhead Maxwell Drugs.
Of course.
But I just wanted to especially thank you for doing this. I mean, this collection of history and photographs is fabulous, and I just want to personally thank you. It just warms my heart every time I hear about it or talk to you or hear anybody bring up the Tiger Dam. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and you're one of the people who kind of grew up in the neighborhood, but people all across town have really fond memories of Tiger Town, and you know, going to businesses there during their time at LSU or while growing up, as in your case. So I appreciate that.
Well, you have been there for some time, but what prompted you to do this at the age of 25? Background in social work, and you decided to open a coffee shop on Chime Street.
Well, I think Baton Rouge at the time needed a coffee shop, and I'd gone to LSU and would like to have had a coffee shop to hang out in and study in, and there wasn't really one. There was Coffee Call, which is a beignet place and was very popular, but there wasn't anything really right next to campus. When I went to UT, there was a coffee shop right off campus that I really enjoyed. It was called Quackenbush's, and so I thought that you know, LSU and Tiger Town could use a coffee shop.
I remember Mike Martin, the former chancellor, he used to go to your shop every morning.
He sure did. He was a good customer.
Yeah, and others, some infamous and famous people have come in
and
out
true.
Of that place,
That's
right?
That's true. That's certainly true.
Have you ever had to throw anybody out, Clark?
A few, but a very few.
Well, for a while, your gate was vandalized, but you took care of that, didn't you?
Well, that was a little rebellion when we first moved from the corner into the back space. And some kids kind of hanging out in the neighborhood didn't like the idea that we were going to move into that backspace and utilize what had been kind of an alley and turn it into a nice courtyard. And so they pulled our gate down, but we put it right back up and it stayed there ever since.
Mm-hmm. Another question from Stephen about the old Mr. Gaddy's. That's been shut down for some time, as has Godfather's even longer, but that location where Mr. Gaddy's is would seem to be an ideal one for some business, but it's been vacant for years.
Somebody's going to move in there and put a nice business in there. It's a big space with a lot of parking. You literally one step off of campus, right? It's going to be right there next to the new Louis. So I think we're going to get a good tenant in there eventually.
All right. Another listener, I've been forwarded a question. Why did you shut down for 6 months? You talked about that.
Well, unfortunately, there was a fire next door. at the old bayou, and the fire, our business, buildings are so close, it burned us down too. And so we had to rebuild everything, but gave us an opportunity to make a few improvements along the way. So it worked out okay.
Now, for a while, you opened a little place on the Highland there while you were on the sidelines.
We did. We didn't want to be gone any longer than necessary, so there was a little space. Now it's a Chi Alpha Cafe, and it's right next to the bicycle shop, and we were able to get in there for a couple of months while we rebuilt the burned down space.
All right. Well, congratulations on almost 25 years. Perhaps we'll get you here on the official anniversary, which is November the...
Approximately the 15th.
So it'll be 25 years on November 15th of this year, which will be 7 days after LSU plays Alabama. Nick Saban returns to Baton Rouge.
Right.
Did he ever come into your coffee shop?
No, I don't think Nick Saban was a big coffee drinker.
You don't?
Not
yeah.
a specialty coffee drinker, at least.
Okay. But there is a distinction between the kind of coffee you get at, let's say, at Circle K and the kind you get at Highland.
Thankfully, yeah, there's a pretty big difference.
Well, thank you, Clark Cadzo. And
once again,
if you'd like to hear more about Clark and the neighborhood, Tuesday next week, the 8th, he will be at the Foundation for Historical Louisiana gathering at the old Governor's Mansion. We're joined now by Raymond Strother, the veteran political consultant, who spent many years in this area and then went off to Washington and conquered the consulting world. His book, Falling Up, How a Redneck Helped Invent Political Consulting, was reviewed positively in places all over this great country of ours. And good morning again to you in Montana, Raymond Strother.
Good morning.
Good to talk with you. Now, Nate Silver, I'm sure a man you have become quite familiar with, considered to be the foremost prognosticator of political races. He says that the Republicans quite likely will win back the majority in the U.S. Senate, and that Mary Landrieu is now has a 55% chance of losing her seat. What do you think, Raymond Strother?
Well, I've learned in the past not to argue with him. He's amazingly good. He's amazingly good in baseball and in politics and in other things, too, I'm sure. But he says the Democrats have a 60% chance of losing the Senate. I'm going to fasten my seatbelt because that's a very good chance that's going to happen.
60%, and this is with a distinct majority right now.
That's right. That's right. Now, in politics, what we've learned, though, is in 10 days, everything can change. I remember this a long time ago. Most of your readers or viewers or listeners weren't alive. But in 1980, just 3 weeks before the election of 80, I was doing some Senate races in Florida and Georgia. Anyway, at that point, we decided that it was a coast. All we had to do was coast into office. And then Ronald Reagan made this huge surge, and everything changed in 3 weeks. It was an amazing thing to watch. That's when Paula Hawkins and Jeremiah Denton and Matt Mattingly and some rather radical people got elected. So things can happen this time, too. But I would tend to go with the odds and say Silver was right.
Well, in that sweep of 1980 in which Republicans took control of the Senate and got the White House with Ronald Reagan beating Jimmy Carter in 44 states, one of the few Democrats to hold on in a close race was your former client, Gary Hart. Could Mary Landrieu be the Gary Hart of 2014, 30 years after the presidential campaign that you ran for Senator Hart?
Yes, she could. She could. Now, it's harder in an off-year election because the election will be smaller, the turnout will be smaller, it'll be whiter, it'll be older. That's just the way off-year elections are. And older, whiter people tend to vote more conservatively. So it would be even harder for her. If this were a presidential year, I would give her much better odds. But I still think that she has an opportunity to win. She's scrappy, and she has a lot of things going for her other than partisanship.
And as tough a race as she faces, Raymond Strother, other Democrats in the U.S. Senate in the South have even more daunting prospects for reelection. For example, Mark Pryor in Arkansas, Nate Silver,
right,
charts it at 70% that he will lose his seat.
Well, this has been going on for a while in Arkansas, since Clinton. It's become more and more conservative, as has Louisiana. Louisiana is one of the last Democratic holdouts. And, Pryor's likely to lose his seat. And I think that Senator Landrieu has a much better chance of getting reelected.
Now, you have worked in her campaigns before.
Sure.
How strong is she as far as having candidate skills?
Well, I have to give her maybe a B- in that. She's a good campaigner. Her weakness would be understanding the technical end of campaigns, I think. She never understood television audiences or some of the finer points of targeting. But she adapts, and she does let people who know more than she about campaigning call some of the shots. So she's a fair campaigner. One-on-one, she's very good. And the problem is, with a state the size of Louisiana, one-on-one is never enough. You can't visit enough people to win. You have to have media. You have to have organization.
Based on our open primary system, it is quite possible there will be a December runoff where Landrieu will either win or lose, and this has happened before. It happened with Susie Terrell in 2002 when Mary Landrieu got about 52% of the votes. This time, the most likely challenger would be Bill Cassidy, the congressman from right here in Baton Rouge.
Right.
And if we've talked about this before, but if that seat controls the majority of the U.S. Senate, all eyes will be on Louisiana for 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll all come down to Louisiana. Or it may not. It may be so out of balance already that Louisiana is immaterial. It depends on how the elections go that day. The Republicans could have a 2- or 3-seat majority, and it won't matter if Mary wins or loses at that point. But there's a possibility the whole nation could focus on Louisiana, of course.
And she is a tenacious campaigner, a good debater, and my guess is that Congressman Cassidy, if he is in the runoff, will be more than willing to debate her. But in this world that we have, in which we have social media and we have massive television advertising and some radio, how much do debates play in a race? What kind of a factor will one or two or three debates have on the race?
Well, always before, in smaller races, and this isn't a small race by any means, a Senate, U.S. Senate race, in smaller races, debates really don't matter much. When you have House races, school board races, all that, and anything less than governor or senator, I don't think debates matter that much. In this race, because of the ability to people to magnify things you say, and particularly on media, on social media, debates become even more important. And Senator Landrieu is a very good debater. I've seen her do extremely good work in debates. And it will be a debate that I would tune in for. Even in Montana, I will find a way to listen to it because it'll be of some great interest.
Now, she may be in a December runoff, and there quite possibly will be a December runoff for the 6th District U.S. House election between Edwin Edwards and another candidate, presumably a Republican. Are you surprised that former Governor Edwards is trying to get back to Capitol Hill?
I learned a long time ago. I did Edwin Edwards' second race, which was a laydown. It wasn't an important race. He was going to win no matter what happened. But I did that race. It's the only race I ever really did for him. And he is tenacious, and nothing surprised me about Edwin Edwards. I would be surprised if he didn't get into a runoff. I think people don't really understand, looking at some of the things he's done, et cetera, how good he really is. I was at a meeting, sitting at the head table with him a year ago in Natchitoches, Louisiana. He was speaking to, I think, the Rotary Club. I don't remember why I was there, to tell you the truth. But I think I was one of the speakers. But anyway, he was introduced, and he got up off the cuff and gave about 15 minutes on what he would do to make Louisiana a better place. And he had this whole room of mossback conservatives standing and applauding. They were so enthusiastic about him because he did have answers, and he didn't give political rhetoric. He actually gave answers to things. And I found it remarkable that he was that sharp and that well informed at that point to say the things he did. So don't discount Edwin Edwards. You know, if he made it to the U.S. Congress, I would not be surprised at all. He one-on-one, he is the best campaigner you will ever meet. And in a debate, he's almost untouchable. He's incredible. So if there is a debate, I think it'll attract national attention, or debates, and I think that he'll really prove himself. So anyone who takes Edwards lightly is making a huge error.
Well, the first poll, which was conducted by the Republican, Daryl Glasscock, has Edwards at 43%, Senator Dan Clater at 20%, Paul Dietzel, the grandson of the Paul Dietzel, is at 19%, and Garrett Graves, an early or a late addition to the field, 4%. So at this point, in a district that has become heavily leaning Republican, Edwin Edwards is at 43%. So I'm with you that for those who are saying he's messing up the Democratic Party, there's no other Democrat around who could get numbers like that in that district. At least I don't think so.
No, I can't think of anyone. Of course, I'm not as familiar with the field down there now as I once was, but I can't think of anyone who would garner more votes than Edwin Edwards. It's funny that he's become the Democrats' hope at this late stage.
Well, our friend Bob Mann, who hopefully will be with us soon, he says Edwin Edwards is far from being a hope, that he is somewhat more likely a nightmare for the Democratic Party, but he served his time, and he has the option to run, and he is exercising that option as a citizen of the United States. And if the people of Louisiana elect him, it will be perhaps the political story of the year.
And absolutely no question about it, and not just a Louisiana story, it'll be a national story. And he'll continue to amaze all of us.
Oh, yeah. And one of the great ironies is that if Senator Landrieu were to lose and Edwards were to win, Edwards becomes the titular head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. We'll return.
Again.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Don Molino is our emergency producer today, and Raymond Strother is with us for a bit longer, the veteran political consultant and author. Wrote a very good novel about politics, Cottonwood, and his autobiography is Falling Up, How a Redneck Helped Invent Political Consulting. Raymond's a native of Port Arthur, Texas. He migrated to LSU, and his 1965 thesis as a grad student predicted that in the future, the outcome of political campaigns would depend more on media coverage and advertising than on traditional political organization. Well, you called that one right.
I did, but it's changing, Jim. It's changing back toward organization because of President Obama and because of modern communications techniques and modern targeting. It's changing a little bit back to targeting and back to personal politics. For example, this morning my wife, who always spends the morning, as I watch the morning news, she has her iPad in her lap. And I notice on her iPad, the ads she gets on her iPad and the ads I get on my computer are different. I am targeted in the same house. You have two different targets. And she's as liberal as I or more liberal than I. So that's not where the break is. I'm not sure why she's targeted differently, but there's something about her life pattern or something about maybe it's gender, I don't know. But she gets different ads. That's how finely tuned it's become. So I was right, and I was right from 65 to about 95. That's a good run. But slowly I've seen organization become more and more important, and I think the impetus behind that was largely this group of whiz kids that supported and helped the president.
Your number is 297-5633 if you'd like to pose a question for Raymond Strother. I do want to note some observations that Raymond made in his autobiography that we perhaps have not touched upon in our many visits with him through the years. You say that as a small child, you prayed at night to Harry Truman. Is that correct?
Yes, I prayed to Harry Truman. I thought he was God, and we would only be saved by Harry Truman because the other God, Roosevelt, had died. And we only had one picture of a human hanging on our wall in our home, and it was Franklin Roosevelt. And Truman was, to me, when I was a, you know, I was a very small child, I was 6 or 7 years old, but pray, I was going to pray to the person who could do the most for me, and it was, at that point, it was Harry Truman.
You also wrote that Louisiana was my foxhole. I wear the scars on my soul. I left in 1980 to go to the District of Columbia. Corruption is an insidious thing. It's a cancer that lives and grows within us without notice. I learned political consulting in Louisiana, perhaps the most corrupt place in America. But strangely enough, most of the people there are not corrupt. They are as good as people everywhere. How do you explain the disconnect between the corrupt politics and the people who, as you write, are not corrupt?
Well, the institutions are more corrupt than the people. There are traditions in Louisiana where politics is manna from heaven, where whatever you want, you turn to politics. And I've often observed, I represent a lot of governors in a lot of other states, but I've often observed that in Louisiana, the governor is so strong, he can do virtually anything. But when I represented the governor of Georgia, we'd go to a restaurant, he would stand in line 25 or 30 long for his place to get a table. And say Governor Edwards or Romer or whoever would helicopter in. I mean, it's a different perspective. Louisiana has a different perspective on politics. I suspect it goes back to Huey Long. I couldn't prove that, but Huey Long and Earl Long had a lot to do with it.
Dylan asks, you mentioned Buddy Romer. Dylan asks, what would happen if Buddy Romer got in the 6th District race?
Well, you know, that's a hard one to answer because he is one of the most talented politicians I have ever met, in that he has an intellect that one can't measure. I think he has a huge intellect, and he's creative, and he would be a fine candidate. But with Buddy, you don't know. You know, he might lose interest in it very quickly. But he's a remarkable man, and he probably deserves another shot, but I can't imagine he would get into the race. And if he did, would he get in as a Democrat or Republican? I'm afraid that's been his great problem.
Right. Did you get closer to him than any other candidate you ever represented?
No, I don't think so. I don't know if anyone gets really close to Buddy. I liked him. I got along with him. I actually lived in the mansion for several months when I was working for him in that failed campaign. And we got along fine. We ate chocolate chip cookies at night and drank milk before we went to bed and all that. But I've never heard from him since then. So, in other words, it wasn't a friendship. It was more a professional relationship. I guess I was closest to Lloyd Benson in Texas, mm-hmm. Roy Barnes in Georgia, the governor of Georgia. I think those were the people I was probably closest to. Russell Long was like a father to me. I can't imagine anybody being kinder or being more helpful than Russell Long was, and I was very close to him. I used to love to go to those lunches with him. He'd call, and we'd go to lunch someplace. And I've been close to a few politicians. Basically, my life outside of my home is political. In my home, I'm never political. In other words, I didn't really play politics, and I really didn't have a lot of political friends. That wasn't my interest. My friends tended to be newspaper reporters, television anchor people, people that I felt more in tune with journalists than I did politicians, always.
I know you were, of course, very close to Jack Germond, who we lost.
Jack was one of my best friends who just died. Well, what a great man. He's been on your show, I think, hadn't he?
Many times.
Yeah, what a great man.
But what about Gary Hart? Were you close to him?
Yeah, I got fairly close to Gary. When you travel with somebody, sitting next to them for a year in an airplane, you get pretty close to them. You get to know them. And I had great admiration for him. He is sort of a cool customer. But he had a roaring intellect. And the other thing about Gary I always liked, because I always thought by being in politics I was doing good, that I wasn't just making money, that I was actually making something better. Clark cared more about his country than any person I've ever represented. I could watch Hart talk about changes he wanted to make in the country, and he would literally tear up. This very cool man would get misty-eyed when he talked about his country. And I don't think that's a part of it I was ever able to show people. I was never able to break through that with my television with him, to show what he really was. But we were fairly close. I don't speak to him much anymore. That's the way life goes, you know. I don't speak to a lot of my good friends in Louisiana as much as I would like either.
Well,
but
isn't it amazing, though, that Gary Hart, whose career ended, political career ended as a result of a sex scandal, has been married 56 years to the same woman?
That's right. You know, I'm not going to even try to explain that. It's just part of human behavior, I guess. But and I'll not cast stones. But he has been married to Lee all these years. And I think they have a very good relationship. They live in a place in Colorado outside Denver called Troublesome Gulch, if you can imagine that. And they moved there right after he lost the presidential race. In 84, 85, I guess they moved there. But that's where they live, Troublesome Gulch. And they're not trouble. They have two children, a son and a daughter. They're both doing very well.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, Ray Strother. Always a pleasure to talk with you, and let's do it again.
Well, I'm looking forward to being in Louisiana the end of this week, so I'm going to go to LSU. I'll be there at the end of the week.
Well, I'll see you in Baton Rouge then.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Thanks.
See you soon. Bye-bye. And we're joined in studio now by Brad Walker, a rising star on the vibrant New Orleans jazz scene, two-time LSU alum. Brad started as a performer in 2009 here with a number of noticeable local acts, and he relocated to New Orleans in 2012, and he is the man who is the inspiration behind the Brad Walker Quintet.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, Jim. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And you play in various places, but you have a gig coming to Mud and Water, right?
Yes, sir. Well, Baton Rouge, I would say, has a special place in my heart as an LSU alum, as someone who got his start as a professional here. And so I do make an effort once in the spring and once in the fall to bring one of my groups up and showcase the music that we're working on in New Orleans. And that night is tomorrow night, Wednesday night, April 2nd at around 9:00 p.m. We will be at Mud and Water as part of a new monthly jazz series that's been going on for about a year there. That'll feature myself, the great New Orleans guitarist Brian Seeger, the up-and-coming local piano talent Oscar Rossignoli, and special guest vocalist Cindy Scott, who incidentally is also an LSU alum.
Who were your inspirations, Brad, when you were in your formative years?
Oh, many people, certainly. I've had kind of an unusual window into the jazz world. I studied at LSU with Griffin Campbell, a really wonderful saxophone player and teacher. So I studied classical music initially. And, of course, I've always been a big fan of the music I grew up listening to, pop and R&B and Motown. But certainly the jazz heavyweights like John Coltrane and Miles Davis have also had a big effect on my playing.
And Baton Rouge has quite a jazz presence.
It really does. You know, I feel like it's very undersold. There's a lot of really wonderful musicians here working as professionals in the Baton Rouge scene, and there's a lot of really strong musicians that have relocated to Baton Rouge, relocated to New Orleans. Simon Lott, Brian Coogan come to mind. I just played on Sunday night with Andy Bourgeois, who's a really wonderful local pianist you can hear at Sullivan's every Tuesday and Thursday here in Baton Rouge. Mike Esnault, who's one of my teachers in college, another wonderful musician who's based in Baton Rouge. So very undersold. There's a lot of good stuff going on here in Baton Rouge.
Well, it's a happening place. Derek Gordon of the Arts Council did a great deed by bringing a lot of great performers to this area.
He will be missed.
He is missed, and we're glad that you're coming back on occasion.
Well, speaking of the Arts Council, tomorrow night they're hosting Branford Marsalis at the Manship, and one of the reasons I scheduled my show tomorrow night was to host as sort of an after party. So we will be celebrating the show and offering half-price admission to anyone with a ticket from the Manship.
So and Mud and Water is not far away.
Quite close. You are correct. 174 South Boulevard. I wouldn't call it walking distance exactly in downtown Baton Rouge, but it's quite close.
So what time's your performance, Brad?
We are going to start as close to 9 p.m. as possible. They have a film event at Mud and Water just before us. So between 9 and 9:30 will be our start time.
And Branford is earlier, Branford Marcellus.
Branford has two sets. He'll be at 7 and 9 at the Manship. So if you go to the early show, bring your ticket to Mud and Water and get half-price admission. And we'll, like I said, we'll be starting at 9. And even if you catch the late set at the Manship, you'll be able to catch our second set at Mud and Water.
So you do one at 9 and then one at...
9 and probably 10:45. We want to start early because we want to make sure and catch the working crowd. I used to be a school teacher, so I certainly understand what getting up at 5 a.m. is like. And so we're trying to do our first set at 9 so that we can at least catch some of the crowd. They can come hear the music on a weeknight.
I'm reminded that today is the 30th anniversary of the death of Marvin Gaye.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. April 1, 1984.
Speaking of inspirations.
Yeah, he was one day short of his 45th birthday. Man born in Washington, D.C., died in Los Angeles, killed by his father.
True
Talk
story.
About a big talent.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Marvin's music is incredible. I still listen to that quite a bit.
You like all kinds of music, don't you?
I do. You know, one of the things we try and do with this group, so we do some original compositions of mine, and we do some adaptations of jazz standards, sort of on the modern end of things. But we also cover mainstream music, certainly. There's a Donny Hathaway tune, who is a singer from Marvin's generation, that we do. There's a couple of more contemporary pop tunes, Sun Kil Moon, Bon Iver, Aphex Twin, that we cover, that people of my generation would recognize. Certainly.
When did you start playing the saxophone?
Actually, I started as a clarinet player, but I don't tell many people
but
that.
But at some point you...
Right. I started in the sixth grade as a clarinet player. And,
sixth grade.
And pretty quickly switched over. You know, it's a lifelong devotion at this point. This is what I do. I say this honestly, bringing this music to Baton Rouge, which is where I started as a student, which is where... I grew into being the musician I am now, means a lot. It means a lot to present this music for a good audience. We've been putting on shows with this group and other groups of mine here since I came back from New York City for 3 or 4 years now, and it's really grown into a strong series, and I'm pretty excited about tomorrow night.
Well, tell us about Cindy Scott, your vocalist.
Cindy, we actually featured Cindy last month with her group, and I was sort of a guest, and I thought the show was great, and so we're going to feature her tomorrow night for 2 or 3 songs on each set, doing a couple of her tunes, which are wonderful. She just released a new record. And doing a couple of mine that we've arranged as instrumentals that were originally vocals. And then one of mine that she is, I think this is really cool, she's taken an instrumental composition of mine and written her own original lyrics to it, which I actually have not heard yet. I'm pretty excited to hear what she's done with it.
So tomorrow night, which will be the 45th birthday of Marvin Gaye, or actually he would have been 45 on the day after he died. He was born in 1939, so what let's do the math on that. 75th anniversary of the birth of Marvin Gaye. You'll hear Branford Marcellus, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. at the Manship Theater, and Brad Walker, 9 p.m. and about 10:45, right down the street at Mud and Water.
Yes,
so
sir.
Be quite an evening for jazz in Baton Rouge.
And I have to say, that's a wonderful venue. If you haven't been yet, I highly recommend it. And local music magazine Jive Flamingo is putting on a monthly jazz series there, of which this is a part. So
75 years ago tomorrow, Marvin Gaye was born, and 70 years ago today, Rusty Staub, the great baseball player who had 2,716 hits in 23 major league seasons, was born on this date, April 1, 1944, in New Orleans, went to high school with Pat Screen, the former mayor of Baton Rouge, former LSU quarterback and great, and Jim Donovan, the insurance commissioner, among the classmates at Jesuit High in New Orleans, of Rusty Staub, Daniel Rusty Staub, 70 years old today. That's it for today. We thank you for listening. For Don Molino, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.